This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome. Yes, it's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year in the studio with journalist and author Araminta Hall. She has already talked at length about One of the Good Guys, which is her latest novel. But here comes the far more grueling Q&A. Actually, it's quite fun. So, Araminta, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
I really loved Rebecca Mackay's I Have Some Questions For You. I don't know if any of you, either of you read it. It's a really, I think she's just an amazing writer. It's a sort of, it's a campus novel, you know, set in America. It's a campus novel. It sort of has everything that I sort of love in a book. And you too would love it because it's about a woman who's a very successful podcaster, and she goes back to her, it's a sort of a very posh boarding school in, I can't remember where it is, but it's somewhere like Vermont or somewhere like that. But anyway, she goes back to the school to teach a summer camp on podcasting. And she asks the students what they want to focus on. And of course, while she was a student at the school, one of her classmates was brutally murdered, and it was this big, again, this big national sort of media frenzy around the case. But the killer was a man was put into prison, and they want to reinvestigate it. So it's partly a reinvestigation of the crime, but actually the really interesting part of the book, I think, is how she looks at how we look at women who have been murdered, or and also the people that we want to be guilty of crimes. And it's just, it's a really, really interesting look at the whole sort of media and podcasting and everything around the true crime genre. So I absolutely loved it. And she's just such a brilliant writer as well.
So I Have Some Questions For You,
yeah,
by
Rebecca Mackay.
Rebecca Mackay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a book or an author that you will always pick up if you want to be cheered up?
I mean, I want to say Sue Townsend because I just Adrian Mole so much. I mean, I first read that probably when I was about 13. I can't remember exactly when it came out, but his diaries are just, they just make me laugh out loud and I love them. So yes, that would be my cheering up.
Those are the first books I read where I genuinely couldn't keep going because I was crying with laughter.
Absolutely.
So it was just, I mean, that first one, that was the first book I read that I hadn't been told to read.
Yeah.
And everyone at school was like, you've got to read this. This is amazing.
That's my experience of it. That's exactly how I remember it. Like, we were all reading it and I feel like we were all around that age, but I can't actually remember. And yeah, and just... And then they just went on. They never waned in brilliance. No. So you can read all of them. And I mean, I can still remember specific entries and, you know, they'll make me sort of chortle as I think about
it. The one that always makes me giggle is because it's set in sort of the early 80s and the announcement is made that the Argentinians have invaded the Falkland Islands, and Adrian Mole's dad panics until he looks at a map of where the Falkland Islands are. And he goes, all right, back to bed.
Yeah,
back to bed.
Exactly.
We'll be fine. I interviewed Sue Tanzen a couple of times because she was, this is on Five Live, because she, because of her site, she was a big radio fan anyway.
Yeah.
And she listened to radio all the time. Mm. And she was fantastic company. I mean, she just was fully engaged, you know, and all the, you know, when the newsreader came in, because it was a desk like this, so the sport would be exactly where Matt is, and the newsreader would come and sit with you, and she would know all of them, you know, as soon
really?
As they opened. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. She really.
I don't think you could write like that unless you were a sort of funny, generous, amazing person. So
we're big fans of libraries mm-hmm. on this podcast. Do you visit a library? Do you go occasionally? Do you never go? When was the last time you used one?
Well, I live in Brighton and we have a brilliant, huge library in Brighton. I'm not a really regular user because I'm really pathetic. I can't write. I would love to be a writer who could write in coffee shops or libraries but I am so easily distracted that I have to sit at home and try not to think about anything else, but will find myself sort of doing the washing or something instead. But so I can't remember the last time I visited the library. Actually, I buy books because I love owning them. So if I'm more likely to buy a book. And I suppose the books I write I don't need to research. I don't need to get like huge books out of the library to research. But I used to go to the library a lot when my children were little and take them to like story times and music times. And actually, my daughter has just been home from university and she spent loads of time in Brighton Library working. So, and it's one of those places actually that, I mean, it's right in the centre of town. So I walk past it all the time and it sort of makes me feel happy.
just for Matt, ask another question. I did one of the first book talks that I did was to a bunch of librarians, and it was like the annual conference, you know.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And I had never seen so many librarians in one room. It was literally 200 or 300. 99% were women.
Oh, really?
And I asked them all, said, why is this? And none of them actually had an answer. But librarians are overwhelmingly female. And the only approach that we got to half a decent question was that it is one of the caring professions and that therefore maybe it attracts women in anyway.
I think that is probably true. Also, it's not paid very well, which is women often end up in those jobs. And also, it's one of those jobs, actually, someone who, when my kids were at primary school, a woman I knew when the children left primary school and went, and she became a librarian. I think it's a job you can maybe go into after. I don't know, though. I don't know the answer to that.
School librarians are on the front line. I think they should have three times more pay instantly.
Absolutely.
Because they're you know, if you get the habit at school, you might get the habit when you leave school.
I know.
I'm also gratified to hear you say that you get distracted easily, because is so distracting. I'm a huge fan of Marina Hyde's writing. She came on the podcast probably about a year ago and talked about how she can literally write anywhere.
Really?
She can write with kids running around the ankles. Doesn't matter, I can still write. And I was like, oh my God. Making me feel awful.
Yeah, I feel really jealous. I mean, in Brighton especially, I have so many writer friends who go to cafes to write and they can't believe I don't. I'm like, I would just sit and look at people.
But the internet's the problem. It's the other side of the screen. The other side of that screen you're tapping into, you can buy socks.
It's very true.
And I can get some shoes and a glass, a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, no, I better switch that off.
No, you can put all those things on your phone, you know, so it turns the internet off for like 40 minutes or something.
Dickens never had this trouble.
No, he didn't. Yeah.
He didn't.
We are better than Dickens. Do you have a favourite TV or film adaptation of a book?
I really, really loved The Quiet Girl, which is an adaptation of Foster by Claire Keegan's novel Foster.
Uh-huh.
I just adore Claire Keegan's writing. I just think she's so amazing. And I really loved The Quiet Girl. I sort of didn't, I was sort of scared because, you know, when you've absolutely adored a book and you think, I can't, you know, surely the film's not going to be as good. But it really was. I absolutely loved it. So I would say that would be the best one I've seen recently.
Do you think it works when the person who's written the book is also involved in the adaptation, has been involved in that?
As indeed you are.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to, I mean, yes, because I have got a couple of things being done at the moment, and I think you have to accept and understand that it's a completely different medium, and the way you tell a story on film or on TV is obviously going to necessarily be different. So I think you can't be precious. I think you have to...
Oh, but you do have to be precious.
Do you think?
Oh, yes.
Or am I going to...
No, you're right. Pull? You're absolutely right. You shouldn't be, but you are. You can't say that. He's my character.
I know, but I think, well, maybe I'm just too sort of pathetically grateful that anyone is doing anything for me. I just say yes to everything. Like, oh my God, it's so brilliant, you know. But actually, I'm really lucky. I'm working with some truly incredible people. I mean, I'm not even really working with them. That's much more grandiose than my actual thing, which is just to read a script and be like, yeah, it's really great. I do... They are incredible storytellers, and I do trust what they're doing. But I guess if they really, really veered massively from your book, you would feel really depressed by it. But I mean, the biggest thing is because both the things that are happening for me are in America, and like the first question they asked was, can we set it in America? So I think once you've said yes to that, you're like, okay, I'm going to let them go.
Now, we always like to surprise our guests with a question from a fan. So here is a question from fellow novelist Dorothy Coombson.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Araminta. It's Dorothy Coombson here. Araminta, as you know, I loved One of the Good Guys, and I've been meaning to ask you ever since I read it, what did you find most challenging about it? You seem to get into the characters' heads so well, and I was wondering if that was challenging for you in any way, and if it wasn't, what part of writing the book was. Okay, bye.
Thanks. That's Dorothy Coombson. It's a very good question. She's slightly too close to the microphone.
Bit close to the mic there, Dorothy. So,
another 6 inches back and that would have sounded fine. But what's... sorry, audio nerds. What do you think, what Dorothy... What's your answer to that?
I mean, that is... She has, obviously, as the brilliant novelist she is, she has seen what the problem would be. I think when you write I have three first-person narrators in this novel, which I was... really scared to do, but I couldn't actually think of another way of doing it, so I went with it. And that was probably the hardest part, was making the three of them really distinct, because it's so easy to, I think especially when you're writing first person, it's so easy to let yourself get into it a little bit, you've written a whole section from somebody's point of view, so you're still hearing them in your head. I mean, yeah, so it was, I really had to work at that. But I did also find the social media really hard. Making traditional media, like really honing down how each piece, the tone of each piece, I guess.
If you were to go back to university, what would you study, or would you do the same thing that you did the first time?
I mean, I probably would. I did English, and, you know, I probably would do that again because I'm a massive nerd and just have just always read just so much and just love reading, and it is my only hobby literally. So I probably would, but actually my daughter is doing history at the moment, and I think it's fascinating. Like, she'll tell me, you know, every holiday or whatever, she'll talk about the topics that she can do next term, and it's just such a fascinating course. And actually, I mean, you know, no, it's not an amazing thing to say, but it so informs, obviously, how we live now. And I just, and also there were just so many incredible stories, obviously. So I feel like maybe I would do history.
It'd be great to be able to just do a taster of a history course rather than having to commit to like 3 or 4 years
exactly.
of doing it. Just, can I have 6 months, please, of the good stuff?
Exactly. And the thing about history that stresses me out, which I suppose is the same as English, actually, is that, you couldn't possibly cover the whole of history, just like you couldn't possibly read the whole of English literature. And so I always get that feeling of, oh, but you're not finding out everything. But
you'd be a nightmare student anyway, Matt. Just give me the good stuff. It's not about good stuff.
Don't give me poetry and don't give me the Tudors. Just, you know.
Is there a favourite place that you have to write?
Well, yeah, boringly at my kitchen table because I'm so easily distracted. I mean, it's not even a favourite place. It's just I would love to be able to say, yes, I have this little cafe I go to that's brilliant. But
a kitchen is a kitchen and other people have rights in the kitchen as well.
So I know.
Yeah.
What do you say to them when they...
Well, I move around the house. And actually, there aren't many people in my house anymore. I mean, my husband goes away for work and my youngest child is 16, so she would rather do anything than spend any time with me or be in the kitchen. And my older two children, well, one's at university and one's moved out and lives in London, so I'm sort of alone in the kitchen quite a lot. It's quite boring though, because I do sometimes feel like that's why I walk a lot, actually, because there has to be a point in the day that I leave the house and see is another vista. Otherwise,
the kitchen is the biscuit tin, isn't it?
Well, yeah. There is that as well.
Coffee, yeah.
Yeah, all that.
Are you looking out onto the garden?
Yes, I do look out onto a garden, which is very nice. I do move around the house as well, but you know, sort of, I'll go and sit on the sofa for a really big change.
So, how are you ordering your bookshelves at home? Now, we've had so many different variations on this, and we had John Boyne last year. Who orders his by geography, which was fabulous.
Yes, there's a UK section, an America section, you know, Ireland section.
Amazing. Okay. So is it ordered? First question, is it ordered? Second question, off the back of that, into what?
I mean, no, is the answer. I have the most disorderly, and I also have a terrible problem in that I can't throw books away. That is one thing. My husband is always saying to me, please, can we just get rid of the piles of books that we are knocking over on a daily basis, and I sort of say yes I will, and then I just can't bring myself to throw them away. Give them away. I mean, I had new bookshelves built last year and I think I filled them in about a week. And no, there is no rhyme or reason to my bookshelves.
Excellent.
And things
like
are put in the top, you know, all the books lying along the top. I can never find anything. No, unfortunately. I wish I was that person, but no.
We have some very high bookshelves. Well, they start like at chest height and then they go up to the ceiling.
Yeah.
And I only noticed last week that my brother's written a number of books and all his are right at the top, which clearly implies that they're never taken out.
Yeah.
You need a ladder to get to them. So it's actually quite an inch. So I'm hoping he doesn't notice.
That
he listens to this podcast.
No, exactly.
Anyway, so... let's finish with dinner, and you're throwing a fantasy dinner party. Mm. You can invite three authors, living or dead. Who's coming?
Okay, Patricia Highsmith, mm-hmm. Iris Murdoch, and Margaret Atwood would be my fantasy dinner guests.
Because
I'd quite like Patricia Highsmith to bring her snails. There are three of my favourite writers and they've written three of my all-time favourite books, obviously. I mean, Patricia Highsmith, you know, obviously, I think is probably the greatest thriller writer that has ever lived. So I would just ask her questions all night, which I feel like she'd be really unreceptive to. I think she'd sort of hate me, Patricia Highsmith. But it
would
be
worth it.
Do you think I'd get it?
No, do you think this dinner party, do you think all those writers would get on?
I do, actually. I mean, I think I would probably be the odd one out. They'd find me frivolous or something. I think they would really get on because, I mean, Iris Murdoch was just so fantastical. And she must have just been so incredible to sit and chat to because her mind must have gone in so many different ways must be dizzying to sort of talk to her, and she was obviously so clever. I just really want her to speak. And The Sea, The Sea is one of my absolute all-time favourite novels. So, and Margaret Atwood, I mean, obviously I have listened to her being interviewed so many times, and she just knows about everything, and she is so wise, and I'd sort of want to ask her what's going to happen in the future because she seems to know what's going to happen in the future before it happens. I just think they would all be fascinating, not not just about writing. I think actually they'd probably wouldn't even want to talk about writing, any of them. I think they would just want to talk about the world and the world as they see it. And I think they all have just such a different take on how the world is that it would be completely fascinating.
I don't know anything about Patricia other than through her writing. She strikes me, she might be a bit dark. And I mean that in a very, very good way, that it would be, you don't want somebody at the dinner party who's just going to be sweetness and light the whole time.
She's definitely not that.
She's definitely not that. I only know her through the writing. Well, I don't know how she... You know how she was, but you know.
I only want people who are sweetness and light.
Well, it would get like having constant sorbets, wouldn't it? It'd be like, I've had enough of this. Can we just have someone who's just going to go, I'll tell you what's wrong, bang?
She would, and she drank a lot as well, I think. Okay. Like, because I've read her diaries, and obviously, and which is sort of 3,000 pages, her diaries, and yeah, there's a lot of loush behaviour and you know, and all that. I think she'd be really fun. I think she'd be dancing on the table. We should either sort of find it all really boring and not want to speak, or she'd be dancing on the table by the end of the night. So I think it would be good.
Araminta Hall's book is One of the Good Guys, published by Macmillan. It's out now. You can hear her talk specifically about that book in our other podcast, which came out a few days ago. Remember, if you want to get in touch, you can email us at any time, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com or via the socials. Back next week, going to be joined by ex-CIA agent, well, he claims.
Yeah, so he says.
An author, previous podcast, David McCloskey, who you'll remember from our last conversation, is ridiculously good-looking, fantastically talented, and therefore I don't believe a word that he says. Anyway, his new novel is Moscow X. We'll talk about that on our next podcast. Thank you for listening. Hope you can join us then.